Today's shiur will be beginning on Daf Tzadi Gimel Amud Aleph, Maseches Bava Basra, second line from the top. Before beginning the shiur, we recommend your printing out the Daf Gemara, and even better than that would be to order your own volume of the Shas Ozer, Maseches Bava Basra. Last time we left off in the middle of a discussion, we had been learning a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel concerning settling financial controversies based on the majority. Do you go in matters of mominus, financial matters, boser rov, following the majority? We noted in the markings last time the appearance of triangles in the sugya. The point at which we are beginning today, in fact, is with a triangle, but it is part of a series that was begun on the previous omid. The triangles that are pointing upwards serve as kashas on Shitas Rav. Shitas Rav, Rav's opinion had been that in matters of mominus, we do follow the majority. As such, in this particular case, with the triangle pointing up, we're going to be asking on that. In other words, we're going to see a case where the rove is not going to be the settling factor. In other words, the fact that there's a majority pointing in one direction is not going to be the means of deciding the case. We notice in our marking system the use of geometric forms. As we just mentioned, we're part of a series. All the geometric forms form a series or an attempt to connect different points with one another. We also attempt to explain the role of each geometric form as they come along by a note on the outside margin entitled Nivne. Another noteworthy point before we begin the Gemara is that there, in addition to the triangle in the text, we've also provided a triangle, Toshma, Tufshin, the abbreviation of Toshma, in the space between the Gemara and the Rashbam, namely to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You'll notice a triangle Toshma with a vertical dashed line. This indicates that all of these lines are part of what in effect is a kasha, a question on Rav. All of the lines that are in the Gemara that are opposite this vertical line. In addition, we also note that there is a framed section of Gemara text. The framing of lines in the marking system indicate the appearance of a Tanaic source, whether they be Mishnayos or Brises, or the restatement thereof. Let us proceed. Toshma, we're beginning a kasha on Rav, where we'll see that in a financial controversy, we're not going to rely on the majority. Shor shenogach es hapora, an ox gored a cow, v'nimsa ubra betzida, and that which had been her fetus, if you will, newborn, was found dead next to it. The eino yodua im ad shaloi nolcha yolda, and what we don't know is whether the cow simply miscarried and the dead calf is dead not as a result of the goring, oi im mishenolcha yolda, or the dead calf came out after the goring and as a result of the goring, the cow miscarried. Mishalem chatzi nezek lepora, being that the goring ox is a shor tam, a shor tam is an ox that hasn't gored already three times. It's relatively new at this experience of goring, and he pays half the value of the cow, the damages inflicted on the cow, uravia levlad, and one quarter of the value of the calf. We've dashed underlined the ravia levlad because this is going to be the main point. point of our discussion. Before we go on, let's just review a point that we mentioned quickly. A shor tam, meaning it's an ox that has not gored three times, the full amount of damages that it pays is called chatzi nezek, is half payment. That's the maximum that it's obligated to pay. As far as the calf is concerned, we see a payment of a quarter of its value. The Gemara clarifies, V'amai, why is it just a quarter? Lema, why not say, Haloch achar rov poros, follow the biology, the behavior, the common known facts concerning the majority of cows. V'roiv porois, misabrois, v'yoldois, v'ho vadai machmas negicha hipila. Rove cows conceive and bear living calves. They don't miscarry. Here we have an example of a miscarriage. Therefore, it should be clear to us, if you follow the majority, that the dead calf is a result of the goring. In other words, if you follow the majority, it's clear that the dead calf is a result of the goring, and if so, then the full amount due to the calf should be paid. The full amount in this case being chatzi nezek, because we're dealing with a shor tam. Why is it that only a quarter is paid? As a result, we see that we're not relying on the rov to decide the matter of doubt. Had we relied on the rov, then we would have said that the payment for the calf must be made as complete due payment, not revia. Complete due payment is a chatzi for the vlad as well. The Gemara answers, we should say that this is an answer on behalf of Rav, namely that in general we would follow the rov. We would follow the majority in order to settle the doubt. Why over here is there only a quarter paid for the vlad? And this is what the Gemara explains in what we term a long answer. You'll notice in the space between the Gemara and the Rashbam, namely to the immediate right of the Gemara text, a tuf with a circle and a dashed vertical line. Tuf is a tshuva or a teretz. And it indicates, the dashed line indicates the length. That means that all of the lines opposite this vertical dashed line are forming the answer. The reason for these long markings is that one should not expect to see the answer within the first line or two. One may have experience with unmarked Gemaras, and he, in learning, realizes that he's about to learn an answer, and sometimes sits at the edge of his chair waiting to see the answer, when sometimes the answer is only long in coming and he doesn't see it immediately. With this marking system, we show you that you need to read all of these lines in order to get a full picture of the response. So the Gemara answers, Hasam, in the case of the goring, Mishum de Mesafgalon, there is an additional doubt. The Ikal Lememar, it could be that the Mazik, the goring ox, came Mikamo Osa, came from in front. The cow saw the charging ox. U Mibiatusa Ipila, and as a result of fear, the cow miscarried. If the miscarriage is a result of fear, the goring ox is not responsible, because the miscarriage took place before there was any physical contact. The ikol ameimar, on the other hand, there is room to say, me achora osa, the charging ox came from behind, umingach nogcha vehipila, and there was a clash. It was a goring, and as a result of the impact, the miscarriage took place. And if that be the case, then the complete payment of chatzi nezek should be paid. As a result of these two possibilities, which in our markings we've featured with a squiggle underlined, notice the expressions the ikal lememar And again, v'ikol ha'meimar, you can see the two sides emphasized visually. As a result of the fact that these two, there's an equal doubt in our mind, it is therefore categorized havei momon hamutal besofek. It's a matter of finances that is a pure doubt. You can call it 50-50. The chol momon hamutal besofek chokin, and the rule that applies to matters of doubt concerning finances, the rule says split it. And that's why the quarter payment is made. The quarter is a split. Is the average of zero and the full chatzi, for the full half damage. The midpoint, the pshara, if you will, is one quarter. As we go on in the Gemara, we see the appearance of brackets. Brackets are used in the marking system most often to indicate a section that needs to be skipped initially. And after doing the initial skipping, one comes back later to see what was contained therein. In the marking system in the Shas Ozer, we try to provide an explanation of the role of the bracketed section as well. In this case, we have an asterisk indicating on the inside margin, an asterisk note, which indicates why this section is bracketed. Even before we read the note, let us point out two things. First of all, the length of the bracketed section is indicated by a special vertical dash dotted line, which appears in your Gemara text to the immediate right of the Gemara, between the Gemara and the Rashbam. If you scan down the page, you'll notice at the end of this vertical line, the bracket, the line therein has the closing of the brackets. Right after that, the second point we wanted to mention is you see once again a triangle. That means that the Gemara is going to pick up the series of questions, in this case, and another question on Rav. The note on the inside margin that we indicated before, if you notice where the asterisk is located, Acharei ha-sograyim ha-gemora mamshicha im sidras ha-kushios. After the bracketed section, the Gemara continues the series of questions. Besoch ha-sograyim yesh nisayon la-hamid machloikis Rav u-shmuel ketanoi. Within the bracketed section, there's an attempt to set up the machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, who are officially called Amoroim. They're part of the Amoraic period. This attempt is to parallel their opinions with a Tanaic controversy. As we said, that's going to be an attempt. The Gemara within the bracketed section will present it as a possibility. And if you take advantage of the markings, even before we read the text, you'll notice in the space between the Gemara and the Tosfos means to the immediate left of the Gemara text, a shin that is encircled, she'ela, a question, with a long dashed vertical line indicating a long question. The question will be, Leimo ketanoi, can we say that the machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, is a machlokas tanoim? At the end of the long question, the Gemara will respond and say that, as far as the Amoroyim are concerned, they do not feel that their respective opinions are part of a Tanaic controversy. That will be explained. With all of this introduction having been said, the truth is, it's not necessary to skip the bracketed section. What is important is to realize that the questions that are posed on Rav will continue after the bracketed section. Continuing in the text, Leimo ketanoi, can we say that the machlokes Rav and Shmuel is a machlokes tanoim, is a Tanaic controversy? In the marking system, as has been noted on previous occasions, sections that are found in a frame are of a Tanaic nature. And hence we have a Tanaic source. Shor shehoya roya, v'nimsa shor horug betzido. Was a grazing ox, and there turned out to be a dead ox next to the one that was grazing. Even though you see a gored ox and the living one is muad, is bound to gore, it's a creature that's become vicious. Ze menushach veze muad lishoch, or possibly the animal was found bitten and the animal next to it is known as a biting creature. Ein omrim biyodua sheze nokhoi veze noshcho. We nevertheless do not say that the victim is a victim as a result of this animal that's known to be in general a dangerous creature. Rabbi Acho Omer, Gomol Ha'oicher Bein Hagmalim, Venimtza Gomol Horug Betsido. If there is a camel that's acting in a wild fashion, Gomol Ha'oicher, the Rashbam describes it as Osuk Betashmish Revia. It's an animal that in a state of heat, where it's in its state of sexual activity, it behaves in a wild fashion. V'nimtza gomol horug betzido, and next to this gomol ha'ocher, the we'll call it wild behaving camel, is found a dead camel. Biyodua sheze horogoi. One can come to the conclusion that the gomol ha'ocher is the one that killed it, and all the more so if you were dealing with a shor hamuad, an animal, an ox that has demonstrated itself to be a goring ox by goring more than three times. There's a Rashbam that's found in the wide section under the Gemara. Biodua shezohar go demuchsaku b'shas revio lahakois. It's known, it's muchsak, it has a status as an animal that hits, that damages others when it's in heat. To kol shekein b'shor hamuad ligach, and all the more so a shor that's gored three times. Shenogach kvar sholosh pamim v'rabusa nokat. The source is citing something of a novel nature. Gomol ha'ocher afapish me'olam lo nogach v'noshach. Rav Acha's opinion is covering an animal that has no history of goring, and even so, it's, according to Rav Acha, guilty of the damage. As we go on the Gemara sets down a certain prerequisite point. Savrua, we're going to make an assumption, deruba v'chazoka ki hadodi ninu, that the phenomenon of majority and the phenomenon of status quo, in the case at hand, a shor hamuad, a goring ox, has a status of goring. That's called a chazoka. So these two institutions, namely majority and assumed status, ki hadodi ninu, have the same legal power. If that assumption is correct, if we make that assumption, we saw in our Tanaic source the Tanakama and Rav Acha. We see Rav Acha following the Chazoka. And the Chazoka can be interpreted at this point as being on the same legal footing as Rov. Did we see in our Amoroyim one who held follow the Rov, follow the majority? Yes, we did. We saw Rav to hold that way. Therefore, the Gemara goes on, Lema Rav, Diomar Rabbi Acha. Let us say that Rav, who followed the majority, would subscribe to the Tano Rav Acha, who said that we come to conclusions based on the chazoka behavior of an animal, the status of a particular animal. And if the animal is of a goring nature, and you find a gored animal next to it, that settles it. Ushmuel, di Omar Ketanakama. Shmuel, who says we don't follow Rov to settle matters, he would subscribe to the opinion of the Tanakhama. At this point, the long question ends. The question being, should we set up or can we set up the Machlokas Amoroim, Rav and Shmuel as paralleling this Machlokas Tanoim? In general, an Amora doesn't want his Shita to be the subject of Tanaic controversy. The Amora, being a later scholar, wants to feel that his opinion is accepted by all Tanoim that preceded him. In other words, it's a fairly uncomfortable position for an Amora to be in when his opinion is the subject of Tanaic controversy. Sometimes, as a result of discussions in the Gemara, that's the necessary conclusion to reach. However, more often than not, the Amora will demonstrate how he is not the subject of Tanaic controversy. And that's what takes place here. In the markings, as you can see, we notice a squiggle underline appearing here, and a similar underlining appears a few lines later. At each point, each Amora, Rav opens up the discussion, and later Shmuel will point out how their opinion is not the subject of this Machlokes Tanoim. Omar Loch Rav. Rav, who said that you do follow majority. Ano di Amri Afilu Latanakama. My opinion could be accepted by the Tanakama, by the first Tana in this source that we saw above. Ant kan lo komar Tanakama hosam elo delo azlinon boser chazoka. The Tanakama provided exemption. That's because the potential way of settling the matter was by following the given status of the animal, the chazoka. The Tanakama feels that we don't settle matters by following chazoka. Avo bosa ruva azlinon. But as if it was a matter of a majority, in other words, to settle the doubt, one would rely upon a majority factor, then the Tanakama would agree that we can rely on a majority to settle a financial controversy. In other words, the institution of Rov is a stronger institution than that of Chazoka. As a result, in the Tanaic case, it's true that the neighboring ox has a status of goring, but Rov oxen outside might have been the ones that bored it. In other words, you look at the general population of oxen are not located over here. Hence, I cannot find guilty the one that happens to be standing nearby. Ushmuel amaloch ano di amri afilu l'rabiacha. Shmuel, who says you don't follow the rove, feels that his opinion of not following the Rov would be consistent with Rabbi Acha's ruling over here. Ad kan lo kamar Rabbi Acha hasam. Until this point, Rav Acha says his opinion that we do find guilty. Elo de'azlinon boser chazoka dehu gufei muchzak. Where we have a chazoka that says that this particular animal has a damaging status, or is a dangerous animal. Namely, we call that a chazoka de gufei. The animal itself has that status. Avol boser ruba lo azlinon. But to follow a majority that does not exist in front of us, I'm not going to allow that to settle a controversy. Hence, Rav Acha found the Gomol Ha'ocher to be guilty. That's because it had a chazoka de gufei. It had an inherent status that shows us it is the likely source of the damage. But if it were a matter of relying upon some kind of general outside majority, that would not settle a financial matter. As the Gemara goes on, we see another triangle. Triangle with the point upwards indicates that we're going to have a case that will serve as a question on Rav. Rav said that in matters of financial doubt, you follow the majority. We'll now see a situation where we don't seem to follow the majority. It's also noteworthy that the source that we're about to see is a quote from our Mishnah. The Rashbam on Daf Tzadi Beis Amud Aleph had explained that the reason the Machlokis, Rav and Shmuel, whether you go Boser Rov B'Momenis, is brought in this particular section of Bava Basra is because of this point now, where in order to settle the Machlokis, Rav and Shmuel, it becomes necessary to cite something from our Mishnah. The Gemara goes on, Toshma Hamocher Peros L'Chavero V'Zoron V'Lot Samchu. Someone sold seeds, fruits to his friend. The customer planted them and they did not grow. Fiafilu zera pishton. And even if the sale was a sale of flax seeds, they were planted and did not grow. Eino chayov bakriyuson. The vendor, the seller, is not obligated to offer compensation. My afilu. Why does the Mishnah choose the expression afilu, meaning even the case of flax seeds? What's unique about that? Lav afilu zera pishton. Is it not so that even a case of zera pishton of flax seeds deruba lizria zafni, and it's worthwhile emphasizing the expression deruba, that rove customers who buy flax seeds buy them for planting. The afilu hachi, and even so that there's a rove that buy it for planting. Lo azlinan basa ruba. We do not follow the rove. Hence, the seller can say, I see you planted it, I see they didn't grow, but I sold it to you for eating purposes. And there's a minority of people that buy it for eating purposes. So we have a source, namely our Mishnah, that would seem to point against Rav. Rav is in trouble. What does the Gemara respond? Tanoi hi. That the issue of going b'momon achar harov is a machlokes tanoim. If we can demonstrate that it's a machlokes tanoim, then Rav will have the comfort of knowing that at least a particular Tanaic opinion can serve as support to his side. In order to appreciate this presentation that we have a Tanaic opinion, it will be necessary to learn a source, and you can see that there's a framed section. The frame continues to Amud Beis. But it will be necessary to read the Gemara after the frame section in order to truly see the Machlokes Tanoim. Before we continue, let's just take note of another marking. In the space between the Gemara and the Rashbam, you'll notice a circled tuf with a vertical dashed line. The tuf is a tshuva, an answer, a response. We had a similar marking higher up on the page. And this serves to show that the answer is a long answer. And it continues till six lines down from the top of Amud Beis. Let us continue in the Gemara. Tanoihi, the issue of do we follow the rove in order to settle a financial controversy is a subject of a machlokes tanoim. Desanya, the source begins. Hamocher peros lechavero v'zoron v'lot samchu. Person sold some seeds to his friend. He planted them and they didn't sprout. Zarone gino she'ein ne'echolin chayov b'achriyuson. If they're the type of seed that no one eats, they were planted and did not grow, so the seller has to make good. He has to offer compensation. Zera pishton, if that which was sold and was planted and did not grow were flax seeds, einoi chayov b'achriyuson. It might be noted that there's no obligation to offer compensation, even though rove of the pishtan seeds are for planting purposes. Rabbi Yossi Omer, noisein loy demei zera. If the flax seeds were planted and did not grow, then compensation must be made. Rov of them are for planting, and they didn't grow. Omru loy, this represents another opinion. Harbe loikhin oisoi lidvorim achirim. Many buy flax seeds for other purposes, other than planting. Therefore, if they didn't grow, there's no obligation to offer compensation. Noticing the expression that the Omru Lo used, this last opinion said, Harbe. He also makes reference to the phenomenon of the rov, the many, the majority. The Gemara asks, Man Tanoi, between whom and whom is the Tanaic controversy concerning the issue of following majority? E Lema Rebbe Yossi the Omrulo. One's first reaction might be to look at these two opinions and say, here you go. Rebbe Yossi said compensation must be made, and the Omrulo said compensation does not have to be made. But truth be told, their point of argument does not concern the issue of do you follow majority per se. Travayu Bosar Ruba Asli. Both Rabbi Yossi and the last opinion place a premium on the issue of majority. So what's their argument? Mar Ozio Bosar Ruba Di Inshi. The Omrulo opinion follows the majority of customers of the world. Given, let's just say for illustration purposes, 10 customers. 9 of the 10 customers will buy flax seeds for food purposes. 1 of the 10 for planting. As a result of that, if rove customers buy it for non-planting, and they were planted and did not grow, no compensation need be made. More, Ozil, that would be Rabbi Yossi. He says, Mor Ozil Boser Ruba Dizria. He looks at rove of the seed quantity, the quantity of seeds. So if you were dealing with, let us say, 10 pounds of flax seed, of the 10 pounds of flax seed, 9 pounds would be used for planting. In other words, we've described the following situation. You've got 10 customers. One customer buys 9 pounds. 9 customers buy the balance, namely 1 pound. However, as far as do we place a premium on the majority, both of these opinions do place premiums on majority. So where do we see a Tanaic controversy regarding that? Ela, e Tanakama v'Rabbi Yossi. The controversy might be between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi, where the Tanakama does not follow the rove. In effect, we saw in the Tanakama, he said that if flax seeds were purchased, were planted, and did not grow, there's no obligation to make good on that. Ah, it's true that rove flax seeds are for planting purposes. The Tanakama does not follow rove. Hence, he said, Eino chayav v'achri yusan. So the controversy might be between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi. He, Tanakama v'omrulo. Or the machlokas tanoim that we made reference to before would be between the Tanakama and the Omrulo, where the Tanakama places no emphasis on majority, namely under no circumstances will I follow majority, and the Omrulo says that I do place emphasis on majority. And Rav would agree with that opinion, namely either Rabbi Yossi or Omrulo, that in matters of doubt, in momentous, we follow Rav. As we continue in the Gemara, we notice a slash mark. The slash in the text indicates that we're about to learn a new point, a new idea that is not associated in terms of logical flow with that which appeared before. Before we continue in the Gemara text itself, let us take advantage of the topic heading in the outside margin, Machlokes Tanoim. We have a Nosei. The Nosei is the topic heading, and it features a Machlokes Tanoim between the Tanakama and the Yesh Omrim in a source that we haven't learned yet. Al mi shemochar zarone gino she'enon ne'echolin velot somchu. The case of the sale of seeds that are never consumed. They are only for planting purposes, and they were planted and did not sprout. Im hamocher tzoruch lefatzos halokeach gam al hoitzoisov. Does the seller have to compensate the buyer not only for the seeds, but for the expenses that the buyer invested in having them planted? The Gemara continues. Tana Rabbanan. Mahu noisein loy. Once again, this is a case of someone who sold zarone gino she'eno ne'echolim, seeds that are never eaten. They're designed specifically for planting, that their purpose is for planting. They didn't sprout. What does the seller have to compensate for? The first opinion is he pays for the value of the seeds, namely the purchase price is refunded, but nothing more. Namely, expenses that were incurred by the customer are not compensated for. The reason for that is the expenses that were invested and hence lost were not an action directly inflicted by the seller. It's called groma v'alma. At maximum, he caused it, but in an indirect fashion. V'yesh oimrim af hoitza. The second opinion in this source says that the seller is expected to compensate for expenses as well. The Gemara asks, man yesh oimrim? Who is this unnamed source? Omar Rav Chisda, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, he. It's the opinion of the Tana, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. The Gemara wants to know, where do we see an opinion of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel that can be associated with this opinion that compensation must be made for the expenses as well? Before we go on in the Gemara, we are encountering a new geometric form as far as this Omid is concerned. We see triangles. It is true that on Omid Aleph we had triangles, but being that we are not looking at Omid Aleph anymore, and especially in view of the fact that we are involved with a new discussion, we allow ourselves to use the triangle again to create a series sense. And as mentioned on previous occasions, we offer an explanation of the various geometric forms as they appear. The explanation here is offered on the outside margin under the Mivneh heading. You notice there's a triangle there. Nisyonos levarer. These are attempts to clarify Eifo Rav Shimon Gamliel Shehu HaYesh Omrim. Where is the Rav Shimon Gamliel who is the Yesh Omrim here? Mechayev Nami Al HaHoitzois Shishkia Lokeach. That would hold that the vendor, the seller, is obligated to compensate for expenses incurred by the purchaser who just lost out on what he purchased. Namely, in our case, the purchaser had purchased seeds, invested energies and time and money to have them planted, all of that a financial loss. Rav Shimon Gamliel holding that the seller has to compensate for that as well. Being that we have this marked off in triangles and a series, you notice one, number one over here, and a number two. If you scan down the page, more than halfway down, you see the second attempt to show which Rav Shulam Leal might hold that. In addition, we should take note of the fact that the first attempt, the Ilema, if you say it's the following Rav Shulam Leal, is actually a long attempt, and that's indicated by the vertical dashed line that appears in the space between the Gemara and the Tosfos, namely to the right-hand side of the Gemara text. All of these lines are necessary to learn before we can come to any attempted conclusions. So let's continue. Which Rav Shimon Leal, where does Rav Shimon Leal indicate that there would be a chiyuv, an obligation to compensate for expenses? E leimo Rav Shimon ben Gamliel demas nisen disnan. If you think it's Rav Shimon ben Gamliel of our Mishnah that says, and as far as the Gemara reading is concerned, the Mishnah will be quoted in two sections. The Mishnah begins, Hamocher peres lechavero, vezoron velot samchu, vafilu zera pishtan. Someone sold seeds to his friend, the customer planted them, they did not sprout, even if it be flax seeds, eino chayov bachriyuson. The vendor is not obligated to compensate. Amos seifo, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, Omer, zaroine gino, she'enon ne'echolin, chayov bachriyuson. Seeds that are never eaten, if they're planted and do not sprout, so those kind of seeds, there must be compensation made. Chayav bachriyuson, compensation must be made by the vendor. The Gemara observes, Tanakama nami hochi komar, the Tanakama would agree with that as well. What did the Tanakama, the first opinion, speak about? He spoke about zera pishton. He spoke about flax seeds. Zera pishton hu di eno chayav bachriyuson. It can be inferred from the Tanakama's point that it's flax seeds that there is no obligation, no need for the vendor to compensate. Ho zarone gino she'enon ne'echolin chayav bachriyuson. But other kinds of seeds, namely seeds that are never eaten, as opposed to the flax seeds, those, the zarone gino she'enon ne'echolin, there is necessity to compensate. Well, notice with our dashed underlining, compare this observation of the Tanakama with the previous dashed underline, where it said, under Rav Shimon Leal's name, that Zareinu Gino Sheinen Mecholim Chayav Bachriyuson, they're one in the same. Now, they can't possibly be one in the same. When two opinions appear in one Tanaic source, unless otherwise stated, they are arguing. Elolav, so rather we must conclude, Hoitza Ikal Binayo, the issue of controversy between the Tanakama and Rav Shimon Leal is the issue of additional incurred expenses and the need to make compensation thereof. Mor Savar, the first opinion, says, Deme Zera. He says that compensation for seeds alone is made. Umor Savar, Af Hotza. And Rav Shimon Leal would hold the opinion that not only compensation for the seeds, the purchase price of the seeds, but also for the incurred expenses. This was presented as a long point. The Gemara began this by e-lema. E-lema is an expression that means, if you think thusly, and one who has experience with Gemara learning knows that these expressions indicate something that will most often fail. In other words, this was an attempt to set up Rav Shimon ben Gamliel of our Mishnah as holding the opinion that one must make compensation for expenses. If this would be successful, so then we would have an answer to the question of who was the Rav Shimon Gamliel that authors the Yesh Omrim above. Gemara says this is not conclusive. Mimai, Dilma, Ipcha. Notice the diamond. It is a new form that appeared in our sugya. What is its role? Of course, it connects you with another diamond which appears just two lines later. On the outside margin, there's an explanation. These diamonded sections are Nisyonais Lidchois Nisayon number 1. These are attempts to reject the first attempt, the triangle number 1 that was featured by the long marking. So, this first attempt says, maybe, Dilma Ibcha means, who is to say that Rav Shimon ben Gamliel is the opinion that holds compensation is made for Hoitzah Maybe that's the opinion of the Tanakhama. As far as what they were arguing about did not appear in the source explicitly anyway. So are we not free to say that maybe the Tanakhama held the stringent opinion that the vendor has to compensate for not only the seed purchase, but for the expenses incurred by the customer? The Gemara says, this is not a serious objection. Ha lo kashya. Kol Tana Basra, every later opinion, if you have a given source and there's two opinions, you have the first and the second opinion, Litfuye Milsa Kasi, he is coming to add. In this case, if the Tanakhama said there is some level of obligation on the part of the vendor, Rav Shimon Leo is saying there's more obligation. So if the Tanakhama said there's compensation that has to be made for the seed purchase price, the Rav Shimon Leo is saying there's more than that, namely the expenses. Well, if that be the case, so then we found a Rav Shimon Leo that would serve as a source for the Yesh Omrim. Namely, the Yesh Omrim would be that Rav Shimon Leo. The Gemara, though, continues. Dilma, v'dilma, kula, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, he. V'chisure mechasura v'hochi kotoni. It could very well be that our Mishnah does not have in it two opinions. It could very well be that the Mishnah represents one opinion, namely, it's authored by Rav Shimon Gamliel, and there are no other opinions. If that be the case, so then we don't have a build-up in terms of obligation on the part of the mocher, and we have obligation to make compensation, but for one thing alone, namely for the purchase price of the seeds. So we cannot use our mission as a source that Rav Shimon Leal here holds compensation for hotzos, for expenses, also must be made. The expression the Gemara just mentioned was v'chisurei mechasra, namely that the Mishnah was taught, but in an abbreviated fashion. The true understanding of the Mishnah is v'hochi katani, is thusly. In our marking system, we treat chisurei mechasra v'hochi katani type Gemaras, where the Gemara attempts to explain more fully the Tanaic source. We treat it as a Tanaic source itself, by providing a frame around this section. So the Gemara continues. The Mishnah should be understood thusly. Hamocher peros l'chavero, v'zoron v'lot samchu. Someone sold seeds to his friend and they were planted and did not grow. Afilu zera pishtan, even if they be flax seeds. Einoy chayov b'achriyusan. Divrei Reb Shimon Leo. The vendor does not have to compensate. And that is, in effect, Reb Shimon Leo's opinion. Sure, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel omer, Zarone gina she'enon ne'echolin chayov b'achir yusan. As far as Rav Shimon Leal is concerned, only in the case of seeds that are never consumed, only then is there obligation on the part of the seller to compensate. Compensate for what? Compensate for the purchase price. We don't see anything in this source indicating compensation for expenses. Therefore, we continue our search, and that's illustrated by the second triangle, Ela Ha Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, Desanya. We have a Tanaic source, and in this Tanaic source, there won't be explicit reference to compensation for hotzos, for standard expenses. However, based on information in the Tanaic source, we will discover that Rav Shimon Gamliel, who you can see is underlined, will in effect hold that there must be compensation made. Continuing again in the Gemara, Elaha Rav Shimon Leal, Desanya, the following source. This source, as you can see by the use of the frame, continues till the Mishnah. Hamoylich chitin litchoin veloi losison ve'ason subin omursan. Someone brought some wheat to be ground, to be prepared into flour. The proper method of preparing wheat for that is to have it soaked, and that enables a more efficient removal of peel, of klipa, of the bran section, which is found to be undesirable in the preparation of baked goods. Our employee here doesn't do the necessary soaking. And as a result, it turned out to be suban o mursan, meaning they it turned out to be poor quality flour. Another case, kemach lenachtom. You'll notice the bays here is because this is an additional example that began with the opening hamoylich. Hamoylich means someone brought, and that's why a colon appeared just on the line just before after the expression hamoylich. It's as if you can read here hamoylich kemach lenachtom. Someone brought flour to a baker, v'alfoy pas nipolin, and he baked bread, but the bread collapsed. It turned out to be a nicely shaped loaf. Behema letabach v'nibla. Someone brought an animal to the shochet, to the slaughterer, and he ruined the slaughtering. In other words, the slaughtering was unkosher. Chayov. The employees featured here have to compensate the customer. B'tnei shehu kenoisei sochar. It's like someone who is being paid. And as such, one who receives payment has to provide proper services. Reb Shimon Amliel Omer, noisei lo demei boishtoi u demei boishes oruchov. The employee in these examples who ruined the food that was being prepared, you can just imagine someone who was about to prepare a festive meal and he had invited guests and he was hoping to be able to serve them some fine kosher meat or some fine cakes and baked goods, and lo and behold, he can't provide that. You can imagine the embarrassment that he experiences in front of his guests. So he has his own embarrassment. He has also the guests are disappointed. There is a value that can be associated to this state of mind known as boshes, as embarrassment. Rav Shimon Amliel says that compensation must be made for that. That being said, we can extrapolate that all the more so for lost expenses as a result of hotzos. Also, as in the case of the farmer that planted the seeds that didn't grow, not only is there a loss in the actual seeds themselves, but what about all his expenses that he invested in plowing and watering, fertilizing, etc.? So here we have a Reb Shimon Amliel who would hold such compensation must be made. V'chein hoya Reb Shimon Amliel omer, and he thusly said, minog godol hoya b'Yerushalayim, hamosir su'udah l'chavero. The accepted practice in Yerushalayim was that if one hires someone to prepare a meal for him, the kilkalah and the caterer ruined it. Noisei lo demei boishtoi u demei boishes orchov. That the caterer has to make a compensation not only for actual costs, but for the embarrassment experienced by the customer and his friends. Od minag godol hoya b'Yerushalayim. Another minag that has to do with meals that Rabbi Shimon Amliel reports to us that was practiced in Yerushalayim was as follows. This has to do with hosting guests. Mapa prusa agabi pesach, a cloth that was spread over the opening of one's doorway. Kolzman shemapa prusa orchim nichnosim. With the spread cloth, this would indicate to guests that there's still room for you. You can come in and take a seat. Nistalka hamapo, when the cloth was rolled up and removed, ein ha'orchim nichnasim. The guests or the passersby would realize there's no room here for them, then they shouldn't enter. This would, of course, be a method of saving a lot of embarrassment on the part of hosts confronting people looking for a meal. The public would just take a look. If the cloth is spread, they have a place. If the cloth has been removed, they don't have a place. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.